A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
You're listening to The Cricket Collective here on TalkSport 2 with me, Neil Manthorpe. And as always, I'm joined by the great man, Steve Harmison, for the usual busy show. We'll discuss Stuart Broad's comments about his England omission, and we'll be joined by former England batter Jonathan Trott as he lands a new role at Warwickshire. As well as that, we'll be joined by England fast bowler Timol Mills after he signed with the Mumbai Indians in the IPL. And we'll hear from Rajasthan Royals CEO Jake Lushmakram as he looks back at this the last weekend's mega auction. So plenty to fit in over the next hour. You're listening to The Cricket Collective here on TalkSport 2. Well, news of Stuart Broad and Jimmy Anderson's omission from the England Test match squad is news that is not fading. It's not going away. And Stuart Broad did nothing to stop the fanning of the flames with his Mail on Sunday column, in which he said that he wakes up every morning increasingly angry and still confused about his omission. And I have to say that the general feedback has been that he's got a very good point. Harmy, it's news that is not fading away, is it?
No, it was never going to as well, with Stuart having the newspaper columns. We've not heard from Jimmy yet, but I think by all accounts, Jimmy's even worse than Stuart. So, and they've got a good right to be. I think Jimmy is rich and he's climbing the walls. So, and he's they've got every right to be. The amount of professionalism they've done, the dedication, I'll say sacrifice, but then people will throw at me, yes, they've been well paid. Hit that, forget being well paid. They've tried to be the best professionals they possibly can be over the course of the last 15, 20 years. And that comes with sacrifice, but also the plaudits that they're getting with it. And he says every morning he wakes up and he's confused and he doesn't know what's going on. I wake up thinking every morning, thinking, how on earth have they come to this conclusion that the course of action should be, after winning one game in 14, Test matches, that you leave Broad and Anderson out. You don't even take them. It's baffling. And they've got every right to be. And I used this comparison the other day, and I wasn't sure if I was fair or not, but I'm going to use it again. When I look at during the last two Test matches, we had John Lewis, England's bowling coach, a member of England's management staff, come out and slag off one of the players for being not professional in Ollie Robinson. And then you don't take two professionals who are the ultimate professionals in standards, in the way they live their life and the way they play on the field. I don't know how they've come to this conclusion, because who makes that decision? Is it Strauss? Well, why is Strauss going to make that decision? He's got three test matches as interim seed or director of cricket. Collingwood, he's got three test matches as interim coach. Taylor, who it probably will still be in a job long term. Root, because he's England captain, and he is staying long term. But the thing with Joe Root is he said at the end of Australia, he expects to see Broad and Anderson in the West Indies. So how they've come to this conclusion, I have got no idea whatsoever. The one thing I will say is the likes of Saqib Mahmood and Matt Fisher, who are going on the trip, I think would have benefited hugely by rubbing shoulders with the two greats of our game.
Well, thanks, Harmy. And on that note, we're joined, as promised in the introduction, live on the line by new Warwickshire assistant coach Jonathan Trott and former England great, of course, batting at number three. So anyway, Trotty, yeah. Before we get on to your new job, and you, like everybody else, will have been caught blindsided, I suppose, by the omission of Broad and Anderson. And I guess you'll want to pick your words carefully, but your thoughts?
It does look strange. When you look at any England squad, certainly nowadays a test squad, and you don't see the likes of Anderson or Broad, and certainly at the top, they're normally A and B, they're at the top of the list. And so it does look very weird. It feels a little bit strange. And I think the selectors have made an interesting call. How it plays out, I'm very interested to see. I like all other England supporters or people who have played for England. And when you make it such a big decision like that, you hope it pays off in whatever way they're looking for it to happen. Feelings wise, I think they played really well. They bowled well in Australia. They you know, the two of them were up there with regards to ability wise, fitness wise. They certainly were. And so it does feel strange. And it'll be interesting to see the reasoning behind it. And I hope it's a clear and a very thought out process. But whenever those two, certainly I know personally and professionally, when those two are confronted with a challenge, they always rise to the top. So I think we'll see them back.
Do you expect to see them back? Do you expect them to see them come back and play, not just for Notts and Lancashire? Do you expect Broad and Anderson, as you know them, to come back and play for England?
Yes, absolutely. They will see this as a challenge, their characters. Throughout their careers, they would have been confronted with different challenges, fitness-wise, performance-wise, conditions-wise. And this will be another challenge for those two guys. You don't go and play 150 test matches if you don't like a challenge, if you don't have the bit between your teeth or want to constantly prove people wrong. The way that those two guys have performed throughout their careers, they will see this as a challenge. And it's up to them whether they want to go on, but I think they physically can go on, and I expect to see them back.
So putting your Warwickshire assistant coach's hat on, you don't want to see Broad Anderson playing for Lancashire and Notts at the start of the season, do you, really?
I've had a look at the Notts and the Lancashire fixtures, so when we get closer to April, I'll be looking a lot closer and giving them a little call, say, you're looking good, you don't need to play the next game, don't worry, buddy. You hope this isn't the end for them. They deserve, I'm not going to say you deserve better, but it's in the game of cricket, nobody's got a given right for anything. You always earn whatever you're given. But these two guys have been amazing for England, and it'd just be sad if they decided that, you know, it wasn't for them to carry on. I don't think it will be. I think we'll see them back performing well for England, and whenever they're ready to call it a day, they will.
Toddy, the reset of the England Test team, it has been said with good reason that the two things that didn't need resetting were Broad and Anderson and Joe Root batting at four. One of the subjects that Harmy and I wanted to delve into your brain about is the difference between batting three and four. We always had the impression that Joe Root needed to be strongly persuaded the times he has batted three in the past. And we're told now by Andrew Strauss that he didn't just volunteer, he actively pursued a promotion up to number three in the batting order. And that's a position you occupied with great success for many years. What do you think motivated that change for Joe?
I think what it does is it allows, because he's obviously England's best player, that it allows other people to come in and get used to playing international cricket at four, five and six. Whereas before, normally the top three would be inexperienced. We have a bit more experience at the top. I always felt that your best player generally batted at four. Sometimes in the case of Ricky Ponting, he batted at three because they had the power like they did at four, five and six. Whereas Joe could literally choose where he wanted to bat because of the options and the constant changing of players. Interesting. Who's going to bat four now? That's the interesting thing for me. Who steps in his place? You know, sometimes you don't want to just put, you know, fill a gap somewhere. There's got to be a reason behind it. I like the fact that he wants to do it. He's certainly good enough. And you always felt batting at four as captain, you give yourself a little bit of a break. You come off the field and you have a bit of a chance to freshen up or, you know, take a bit of a break. But recently he's been in quicker than, you know, you would have liked. So batting three or four, I like the responsibility he's taken on, and I think he's well more than capable of doing, exceeding, you know, all expectations of what's needed for number three. The thing for me is he's done so well at four, and if he hadn't done it as well as he had in the last year or so, the way that he's played, then I'd say, yeah, maybe a change. But I just, you know, if it's not broke, there's no point of, you know, fixing it. And I just think we need to find players who can bat it in the top four and have that constant, you know, that not that constant sort of changing of openers or three or four.
And the talk about Jonathan Trott, the new assistant coach of Warwickshire. You've been in and around England setups. You've been around other national team setups. Is this you giving yourself a chance to have some time, a long period of time coaching at a club with the view that Jonathan Trott, the coach, will sort of benefit in the next year to come of getting back into an England setup more full time?
Well, yeah, you know, that there's always been the case of spending the odd time here and there with England and popping in when certain coaches have had a bit of a break or there's been a gap or squads have overlapped. So that's been fantastic. I've been on 3 or 4 Lions tours as well, which is so well adverse with regards to the ECB and the way that it operates. And Andrew Strauss is going to be obviously a little bit different, probably not too dissimilar to the way that it was before. But whoever the new coach is and whoever decides on who they want around. So spending a bit of time at Warwickshire, you know, having been away, went and finished playing and went down to Kent for a season. And then, unfortunately, COVID hit. So I was with Warwickshire last season and I spent a bit of time with Scotland at their T20 World Cup campaign. So I had quite a bit of experience. So now having the continuity at Warwickshire is really good. And, you know, hopefully we can build on the championship success that I was lucky to be a part of last year. So, you know, the future is pretty bright, but all the other counties will be chasing us. So we got to make sure that we're, you know, on the pulse of it all and ready for the summer starting against Surrey in April.
Trotty, you would have seen the comments from your director of cricket, Paul Farbrace, a couple of weeks ago or maybe a month ago. Fascinating about coaching and methods of coaching and perhaps a lack of specific technical coaching at county level, at senior level.
Sure.
And it perhaps it's become more inclusive and not quite not quite firm enough, I suppose, when it comes to technique. What did you think of those comments at the time, and is there some truth in them?
I certainly agree that there's some truth in those. I think that nowadays, I think we play as the saying of all, you know, that's the way that you play or that's the way that he plays. Sometimes I think it doesn't fit. I think sometimes as a coach, it's our responsibility to have conviction in what we think as a coach or from our experiences as a player and obviously as a coach now and what we've seen and what we see and what we know that works. I think as a coach, you got to have belief in yourself and that and not worry about finger pointing and things that go on, whether you help a player and you change things of it and whether that doesn't work or not. Sometimes we're a bit scared to because then you're accountable for things that you've now told a player or maybe he could change. And if it doesn't work instantaneously, sometimes you have a finger, you're worried about fingers being pointed at you. So as a coach, you've got to put that to the back of your mind and believe what you're doing is for the player is for their benefit or for the side's benefit. And I think as coaches, we can't shy away from that. You've got to be able to, especially from a younger age, teach the basics really well. The one thing for me, I would like to see younger players, obviously with introduction of white ball cricket and the lure of white ball and T20 franchise around the world. It's just helping young players set up their game to bat for long periods of time and what's going to serve them well. Doing the basics continuously is what is needed, I think, and will, I think, in the long run, help players develop their white ball skills as well. I think at the moment we'd like to see this, you know, just white ball focus and hitting sixes. I think nowadays we're seeing a lot of school cricket, a lot of T20 cricket being played at school. Kids are learning to try and hit a six before they can block out a maiden or bat for a period of time. So as a coach, you have different challenges now to say different generations. So that's the interesting thing for me as a coach and what I enjoy the most.
And two people that are at Warwickshire who are intriguing to me. One bats for a long period of time. And I thought what he did in this winter was brilliant. He decided not to go on the Lions, Dom Sibley, wanted to work at his game, thought this was the best way for him to get better and then come back, hopefully, and knock on the test door again. And young Rob Yates, who had a fantastic, got great numbers, fantastic year. Possibly unlucky not to go ahead of Alex Lees to the Caribbean. First of all, Dom, has he ironed out a few technical things that he's working on? Because the temperament and run scoring and batting for long periods of time, I don't think there's any question there. And where is young as Yates at now if the two openers in England and the Caribbean don't go according to plan?
Dom certainly has worked on a few things and trying to iron out those things that perhaps crept in. We all know with regards to test cricket, the scrutiny you can go under. So that's always going to be the challenge for Dom, is to handle that scrutiny. His technique is a little bit different, or is not as, what you would say, classical with regards, but is very, very effective when he gets it in, you know, when he plays the way that he can, and what got him into playing for the England side. So just ironing out a few things that maybe crept in, and is hitting the ball really well. We've been working, you know, since the beginning of the year. Technically, he's been working at his game and is looking really, really good. You know, this is all indoor as well. So the ball's not really nipping around as much as it will be in April, and I'm very excited to see him play. With regards to not going on the Lions tour, I said to him, you want to make sure that you're there, because if you're going on the Lions tour, I was actually for him going on the Lions tour, and that he was there, he was in the window. If he did well on the Lions tour, then he could get back in for the West Indies. And I think he felt, which is credit to him as well, he's very strong in his beliefs that, you know, I need maybe 5 months. I don't want to then get back to international cricket when I'm perhaps not ready. I want to make sure that my game is, you know, completely rounded and I'm ready to get back thrown in, not necessarily for the technical challenge, but also the mental side of the game and being strong enough and confident enough to be able to handle the pressures of international cricket. So full credit to him and really pleased with the way that he's going. With Rob, another very exciting young player and very, very close as well, I'm sure, to that test tour. But I'm excited for him to have another season of first-class cricket, get to know his game a bit more before he goes, hopefully, into that international stage, which I'm sure he will do at some stage. And it's about hopefully being in the right form and you know, in the right place with his game when he does. Because as we know, as an opening batter, there's not more places that are as testing, if you like, when you go into international cricket. So he will get his game in good order and hopefully scores heavily, you know, in April and May.
Finally, Toddy, back to the Bears. When Mark Robinson was appointed as head coach, Harmy and I both said we felt that given his success and achievements, he was one of those coaches who strangely wasn't given the credit that he deserved. But with Farby as director of cricket and Mark Robinson and yourself and the coaching set up a really good quality squad of players, many of whom are you know, the sort of the right side of 25, you know, they've got many of their best years ahead of them. It's got to be really bright times at Edgbaston.
Yeah, I mean, we're lucky and we got some exciting players. I think we have a great balance with regards to our side, and guys like Danny Briggs who've come in and filled the role of Chetan Patel, who's been a stalwart at the club, or youngsters stepping up now and scoring runs. We've got the under-19 England captain, Bethel, who's an exciting young player. Dan Marsley as well, is an exciting young batsman. So we've got players coming through, and Ollie Stone coming back from injury. And it's a big year for Henry Brooks as well, I think, is an exciting seamer who's had a few injuries. And hopefully can, you know, get back to where he was a few years ago. And Liam Norwell as well, he's non-travelling reserve for the West Indies tour, who impressed on the Lions trip. So competition for place is always going to be healthy come early April. And that's what you want as a coach. You want guys pushing themselves and pushing each other.
Troddy, have a fantastic season. Enjoy the pre-season. It must be great watching the guys flog themselves indoors rather than having to do it yourself.
Correct. There's nothing better than watching people warm up. It is the best feeling in the world when you get to stand and watch them warm up.
I agree to that. Oh, I love watching people warm up. It's brilliant.
It's the best thing ever.
The anguish on it.
You could go up to them and say, listen, I want you to raise your intensity and warm up, please. You're a bit lackadaisical here. Don't be like me.
Do as I say, not as I did.
Exactly. All right. Cheers,
fantastic.
Guys. Great seeing you.
Cheers,
and
thanks
for the chat.
And a reminder, you can hear all three test matches between the West Indies and England live and exclusive here on TalkSport 2. Right, as promised, Timol Mills has joined us live on the line to look back, not just at his personal success in the auction, if that's what being bought is called. Is that success? I suppose it is, especially when you see those eye-watering numbers. Timol, how did you find out, first of all? Where were you? Were you watching it live?
I was watching on my phone. So I've just been up in York for the weekend visiting some mates, and we'd been out for breakfast. And as you know, the auction's a long process. You don't know exactly when you're going to pop up. But I knew it was by the time it got close to me, we were just wandering through York City Centre, was chucking it down, and yeah, I just pulled up the stream on my phone, and me and my mates just huddled around my phone, and yes, just to see if I ended up getting picked up somewhere, and yeah, fortunately I did.
How exciting, Mumbai Indians. Not Jofra this year, but I'm sure you'll be around. What a mouth-watering prospect that is for batsmen at the end of a day, at the end of a 2020 game. Jofra Archer, Jasprit Bumrah, Timal Mills.
Yeah, as you say, it's. I'm looking forward to getting out there. Yeah, looking forward to playing with Bumrah, one of the great bowlers in the world at the moment. So looking forward to learning a bit off him. And yeah, obviously, I'm sure, as you say, I'm sure Joff will come out at some point. I don't think he's going to be available to play, but I don't know what exactly his schedule is. But yeah, look, down the line, if I can get retained for next year, hopefully, yeah, the three of us can get out there together and hopefully put on a show. But I'm looking forward to this year first and foremost.
Timal, what were the other stories that struck you? I mean, there's Liam Livingstone going for over £1 million to the Punjab Kings. There were a couple of very surprising misses as well, weren't there? Owen Morgan and David Milan not signed. But who else caught your eye? Benny Howell picking up a contract. That was that pleased some of us who are fans of the unusual.
Yeah, definitely. Benny's obviously been a really strong performer in England for a while. And there's the link with Punjab had Dan Weston, who's the analyst for the Birmingham Phoenix and also the team that picked up Benny in the T10 recently. So Dan obviously managed to get his guy there as well. So yeah, as you say, it's great when guys get opportunities that maybe haven't had them so far. You get to see where they're at. As you mentioned, Livy, he's been, you know, the last 12 months, he's been an absolute superstar. I've been bowling at him in various leagues for the last year, and it's very difficult. So yeah, it's great to see him get a big deal. But as always, some guys miss out. Often kind of overseas spin bowlers just aren't in demand as much as others, as fast bowlers, for example, just because there are just so many spinners in India. So it's unfortunate for those guys. But you know, I've been on both ends of the spectrum in terms of obviously getting bought for a lot back then. I've been bought for a lesser amount this time, and I've also gone unsold a couple of times the last few years as well. So it is what it is. You've just got to put your name in there and hope for the best sometimes.
And go back to your experiences of IPL and dressing rooms. You played with some, obviously, England are a fantastic white ball side, 50 overs and T20 side. You're going into the ultimate T20 side, aren't you, really? When you look at it, the amount of times the Mumbai Indians have won the IPL, the players that they've got, what are you looking forward to most, and who are you looking forward to rubbing shoulders with? Because you've rubbed shoulders with the good and the great from an English point of view, but now this is... You know, it's different when you go into the likes of, you know, Rohit Sharma, Kieran Pollard and all these players who have been, you know, serial winners in the T20 format of the game, especially in the IPL.
Yeah, for sure. And you're right. Look, back when I played at RCB, we had Chris Gayle, Virat Kohli, AB de Villiers, Shane Watson. And to be honest, I was quite young. I was only about 24, 25. I was probably a bit naive to it all, to be honest. I kind of just went in there and wasn't too fussed by it. I don't think I will be now. I think it's important. Like, I'm an overseas player. I'm one of, seven. If Joff doesn't come, I'll be one of seven overseas players. Quite a lot of responsibility there. Like, I'm 29 now. I've played international cricket. I've played all around the world. I'm going to hopefully look to go out there and be kind of one of the leaders within the bowling group. Try and offer any information, any experience that I can. But yeah, you're right. Obviously going to be playing with Rohit Sharma, Kieran Pollard. I've played with in the Pakistan Super League, so I know Polly relatively well. You know, Surya Kumar Yadav, Ishan Kishan, there's some really big names within the side. And it's just about how well you gel as a team. Obviously, all the teams have had to restart with the new auction cycles. So there's not many guys kind of from previous regimes. Obviously, the Pandya brothers, for example, have gone elsewhere now. So, yeah, it's just a case of whenever we get out there, kind of forming that continuity and gelling as a team before the first game.
Well, just on the process of the auction itself, it's quite brutal, isn't it? It's quite ruthless. I mean, you know, you're commoditized like a meat market, like a butcher shop. I wonder sort of how Jason Roy feels about going for, not that £200,000 is not a lot of money, but, you know, looks at other openers and thinks, am I really worth four times less than him or five times? Do you know what I mean? It's... I mean, there are lots of things that are out of your control as players. And then, of course, you know, all the guys that go unsold, and they must go through a period, especially the sort of younger ones with great ambitions. They might sort of go through a period of feeling, well, I'm not valued. I'm clearly worthless because that's what my value was in the auction.
Yeah, it's tricky, and you have to be careful with your mindset, as you say. If you start looking at it and comparing yourself to others and how much they've earned compared to how much you've earned, or if you haven't been fortunate enough to get a contract at all, it can, you know, be a bit demoralizing and potentially a bit damaging to kind of your mental state going out there. But yeah, the auction is a funny one. You know, where you come up in the auction can completely dictate how much you end up going for, or even within your group. So for example, you come out in groups of 10, there's 10 bowlers, 10 batters, wicket keepers, but then within that 10, it's random. So if all the teams, for example, are waiting for a particular player and that player doesn't come out until 8th, 9th, 10th of that lot, then a lot of those first guys will end up getting unsold. I think it happened in the wicket keepers. I think they were all waiting for Ishan Kishan to come up, and he went for one of the biggest, if not the biggest amounts in the whole auction. But as a result, all those wicket keepers that came before him went unsold because they obviously, nobody wanted to buy a wicket keeper and then not need them. So it is a bit of a lottery, unfortunately. You've got to hope you come up at the right time with certain teams having, you know, certain amount of money left. Ultimately, you can't, as a player, you've just got to sit back and watch and hope for the best.
You've just explained more to me about the auction than anybody else in the last 10 years. That was the most insightful 30 seconds. That's absolutely incredible.
Well, there you go. You're welcome.
Back to you, the way where you are at this minute in time, how did you feel the West Indies went? Body, performance, and between now and IPL starting, what's the plan?
Yeah, it's a tricky one. To be honest, obviously, I didn't have the results that I wanted in the recent series in Barbados. Got a little bit of tap, but you've got to keep it within context. I think you're obviously out there yourself, Army. It was relatively small ground. All the wickets, apart from the first game, all the pitches were pretty good for batting. There was a breeze, pretty strong breeze going across one way, which helped batters as well. And obviously, the West Indies have got one of the more formidable batting lineups. So you have to keep it within context. To be honest, I was maybe flagging a little bit. I've been away all winter, played in the World Cup, then stayed for the T10, then flew to Australia for the Big Bash. And yeah, I think maybe I was just kind of on the downward curve a little bit, just in terms of freshness. Like body feels fine, no injuries to speak of, touch wood, which is nice. But yeah, it's been a long winter, so it's nice now. It's absolutely hammering it down at the moment in Hove. I'm just sat in my car having trained. But
don't ask manners what temperature it is where he is, please.
Yes.
Keep telling us he's having to switch his aircon off. It's 32 degrees.
Yeah, it's not happening here. But I've got a nice block at home now, which is nice. I had an opportunity to go to the PSL, but I decided to turn it down and spend some time with my young family. I've got a young daughter and a wife who needs some help. As you know, when you're away from home for a long time, it affects more than just us as players. So spend some time at home, which is nice. And then also take the chance to just come out of bowling. So kind of the plan is to have 3 weeks off bowling. I'm halfway through that at the moment. Get back in the gym, get back doing some strength work, some running work, and then build the bowling back up. We've got the marquee up here at Sussex, so I'm able to bowl outside, which is perfect. So I'm not in the indoor school. And then, yeah, I'll have kind of 2.5-3 weeks of training here at Hove to get ready for the IPL and hopefully be fresh as well, obviously. It's probably going to be in a bubble in Mumbai from what I'm hearing. And, you know, obviously I've spent a lot of the winter in bubbles. And if I would have gone to Pakistan, that would have been another 3 weeks in a hotel bubble. So those are the things you've got to be mindful of. I'm feeling good now, and hopefully come another 4 weeks time, I'll be raring to go and heading out to Mumbai.
Enjoy the time off, Timo. It's going to be a fantastically busy and exciting year.
Yeah, definitely. I'm looking forward to it. Thanks, guys.
It was Timo Mills joining us live after training. Harmy, your thoughts on the auction? I mean, how do you think you would have coped mentally with the idea of putting yourself in the shop window and then possibly being rejected? Or at your peak, you know, you would have had maybe thoughts of banking $1 million.
And then it would have been nice. I don't know, to be honest. I've had a couple of conversations with, obviously, with Mark Wood about playing in the IPL. And I've always said, if if somebody wants to pay that money for you, then as a fast bowler, this is the difference. You know, Timo Mills just said there, obviously spin bowlers aren't that high in demand, but fast bowlers are. So there's a value of that. And I think my opinion would be that my value would be high. And if my value was picked up because somebody wanted me to go and wanted me, you know, like you say, it was a meat market, the commodity is there. If they want you, they have to pay for you. And then it's probably the one time you do play the game for money. I always said at the end of my career, I should have retired in 2009. Should never have played for Durham for the 3 years I did, because I resented the game. By the end, I wasn't enjoying it. I was purely playing for financial reward. Now, the financial part of the game was something that I had a contract. I fulfilled it because I didn't have anything else to go into as such. I should have left the game in 2009 and went, because I was playing for the love of the game. But I don't think you play for the love of the game when you go to the IPL, largely because you could change teams every 2 years. You could play for different franchises. So from that point of view, it'll probably be the only time you play for money. But you then have to have the balancing act of, well, if I'm going to be away, after being in a bubble with my international team and the cricket I've been playing around the world, I need a high value because of the fast bowler I am. And I think that's where I'd have probably looked at it. And if somebody didn't take me for that price, well, then I had that time off. And that would be the way I would have looked at it. But I would have loved the challenge of playing in the IPL. I love the challenge of playing against some of these fantastic players from all around the world. And I think we've seen a glimpse in the West Indies that players who are very, very good franchise players, there's still another step again when it comes to international cricket. As good as the IPL is, we've seen again, it is still another level of playing international cricket. And I think that's the challenge between going from franchises to the international circuit.
Final thought, maybe we haven't mentioned Liam Livingstone enough. If you were to have got a computer program to design the perfect prototype T20 player, you might well have ended up with a big, powerful, six-hitting right-handed batter who bowls leg spin to right-handers and off-spin to left-handers. So maybe that's not a surprise you went for over £1 million.
No, I'm not surprised. I think it's brilliant. I'm really pleased for Liam Livingstone for the simple fact he didn't go for a lot of money last year. He came out of the bubble because he was struggling from a mental point of view. Plus, I think he wanted to set a challenge for himself to play for Lancashire, potentially play for England. So from that point of view, again, a bit like we talked about Jonathan Trott earlier, about Dom Sibley, having a clear plan of what your career path is. But then since then, his career path has gone on the up and up, especially in T20 cricket. And it doesn't surprise me. He's gone for the over £1.1 million. I'm chuffed a bit for the lad. He deserves it because the way he's performed for England. And I hope he goes over there and he's the best player in the tournament, because we want our best players to come back and really have a good tournament, because it only benefits English cricket in the long run. And I'm pleased for Liam. I'm pleased for Mark Wood that he got a big contract as well. And also Johnny Bairstow. I'm pleased for Johnny as well, because he was in the bracket of non-test contract as well. So, you know, I'm chuffed for them too as well, because that's just a little reward for sticking at the game and making sure that, you know, they keep their standards high. And have been rewarded with a chance to not only play to go to the IPL for good money, they're actually going to play at the franchises they're at. I don't think there's any question that Liam Livingstone, Mark Wood and Johnny Bairstow will not be in the first 11 and one of the four overseas players at the franchises they are. So that's good for English cricket as well.
You're listening to the Cricket Collective here on TalkSport 2 with me, Neil Manthorpe, and former England fast bowler Steve Harmison. A reminder that you can hear all three tests, by the way, between the West Indies and England, live and exclusive, right here on TalkSport 2. You're listening to the Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2 with the Institute of Cricket.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
You're listening to the Cricket Collective here on TalkSport 2 with me, Neil Manthorpe, and former England fast bowler Steve Harmison. And if you've missed any of the show or you wish to catch up, you can, as always, download the podcast from the following on feed, now available via the free TalkSport app or wherever you get your podcasts. I'm delighted to say, as promised at the top of the show, we're joined live from India by the chief executive of the Rajasthan Royals, Jake Lashmakram. Jake, it's a mega auction. It was a mega auction in every sense of the word. I mean, it was televised live. People who don't follow cricket particularly strongly have been in touch with me saying, are you serious? Did they televise the auction live for 2 days? I mean, it is a massive, massive event. I would imagine it's quite draining on those of you who had to sit through it for 2 days.
Yeah, absolutely. I think 2 days on now and I'm still struggling slightly to get back to full fitness in terms of mind, body and soul. But it was a lot of work that went into it. We spent 7 days in quarantine to ensure we were safe coming before the auction. So that was, you know, with Kumar, Zubin, Giles, myself, every sort of precaution was taken. And through that period, you're running 20 simulations. You're doing various, you know, analyses on the various players, debating priority lists. And then on the auction day itself, as you say, it's sort of the full day. Once the first day's over, back in the meeting room for the second day, and you're there till about 2 a.m. just finalizing all your plans. So it's draining. I think it's been live in India sort of every year since the start, but this was the first year Sky Sports bought the rights to show it in the UK. And I think it was well worth the money they spent because it was an amazing day of action, I thought.
Jake, everybody sets out, all the 10 franchises set out with their ideal. I guess, you know, you all have a list of 20 or so players. What percentage would you give yours? How much did the squad shape up as you hoped it might?
I think in a mega auction, you've got to be flexible. So you've got priority lists for every role. And so, you know, did we get one of the top two in each of the roles we were looking to fill? Yes. And so I think that was really, really good for us. We actually overexceeded in some areas. Being able to get Ashwin and Yuzi Chahal, we weren't expecting to get both. So that gives us for sure the best spin contingent in the league. And we were able to build a really, really strong Indian core with Devdutt. We've obviously got Sanju, Jaiswal in the side, Prasheed Krishna, Saini, and many more. So look, we were really happy with what we were able to achieve and the flexibility in there. We were looking to get players at value. And so you'd have three or four players for a role. And if the player was undervalued, you'd secure that early because then that would give you clarity for the rest of the auction as to where you could spend some money. Some of the franchises saved quite a lot, missed the first three or four lots, and then they got pushed up later with the likes of Sharad Khan and Rahul Tavati going for 9 crores. So we were keen, if there was value early on, to secure those quality players, which would help us in the back end.
There are so many storylines, Jake. You know, you look at every squad and, you know, there's half a dozen really strong stories in all of them. I guess one that has caught the attention of observers is the unification of Joss Butler and R. Ashwin after their little mancad episode a little while ago. Is that all water under the bridge? Do they have a laugh about it now?
Yeah, absolutely. I think you probably saw the videos on social media the day after. Look, they're both winners and they're both delighted to be in the squad with each other because they're both world-class individuals. So, you know, I met Ashwin yesterday, actually. He's just excited to be playing with Joss because, you know, they both want to win the championship. So I think, you know, quality respects quality. And they've had a bit of humour around it as well. So we're looking forward to getting them together and winning many matches together.
Last year, of course, Ben Stokes, Jofra Archer, Joss Butler, that trio caught the attention of a global audience. It didn't work out. A sense of disappointment that Ben and Jofra are no longer part of the Royals family?
Absolutely. we faced challenges over the last 4 years around injuries and availability. We felt if we could have had them all there, fully available for any of the seasons, we would have been in the top of the table. But look, Jofra, you know, we were in touch with him during the auction afterwards. We tried our best to get him back, but Mumbai had saved a lot of purse to secure him. So him and Bumrah is going to be a scary proposition to face. But, you know, for now, we're still helping as much as we can with his sort of progression to full fitness and looking forward to seeing him back on the cricket field. And Ben, again, he's, you know, taking time off from the IPL to get himself fully in shape for the test summer. And hopefully, you know, never know, Ben could be back with us in the future. But both are incredible people. They've given so much to this franchise, and they'll be always part of our family, whatever happens.
You bought four players in the last kind of couple of minutes at the auction. And, you know, there were, again, you referred to social media. There were lots of people saying, what are the Royals doing? They've only got four overseas players and the auction's about to finish. But then the players you did buy, it looked more like a cunning plot than a miscalculation.
Yeah, I think that there's quite a few people who maybe hadn't seen a mega auction before. So we knew in the accelerated round, you would give 10 names, then five names, then five names. So our strategy was just to hold these players back as long as possible, let the other franchises fill up their spots, and then we could secure them all at base price rather than any team getting tempted to bid on one of them. So it was part of the plan. Thankfully, it worked out. You never know. Even when you wait that long, someone could still bid against you. But thankfully, they all play really crucial roles within the setup, and we're happy to get that quality on board.
Jake, so much of the world's attention is focused on the overseas players, and you know all the storylines of the big players who weren't signed, and guys like Adil Rashid, and well, there are many of them. Owen Morgan. But the reality is that, you know, there are seven Indians in every team and they win more games than the overseas players. It's almost like the overseas contingent is a bit of a distraction.
I wouldn't say a distraction. I think the players work really well together to win a championship. You need strong in both areas. I think you're right in saying you need a strong Indian core, which is what we've secured. I think for the last 4 years, because the 2018 auction, we weren't able to do that. Finally, we have now. So, you know, the seven Indians in our lineup are all really high quality, and the overseas going with them are world-class individuals. So, you know, Joss Butler, I just love the combinations of Joss Butler playing with a Yashasvi Jaiswal, a Paddy Callan, a Sanju coming next, then a Hetmyer. It's explosive, it's entertainment, and I think it's a combination that's going to help us win the majority of matches this season.
Concerns about Hetmyer's fitness?
No, we've been speaking to the West Indies set-up, and we've obviously got the Barbados Royals as well, so we're working closely with them. And then, you know, he was playing a match last weekend and we'll be making sure he's fit for the season.
There's so much data analysis. I mean, it's mind-boggling. It's one of the great burgeoning businesses of T20 cricket, the data analysis. And, it, you know, it's almost, I don't know, is there room for personality still, Dim? In your decision-making and in your bids on players, does personality and character come into it at all?
So I'd say firstly on the analytics side, I think there's still a long way to go. If you look at baseball and other sports around the world, I honestly think they're 5 to 10 years ahead of us. So we've still got a long way to go and we're investing a lot in that area to catch up. On the personality point, look, from our perspective, if there's two players of exactly the same quality and one's a better personality, then yes, we'll sign them. I think if a player is a very bad personality, that may prevent us from purchasing them, especially if there's other quality around. But we'll never sign an under-qualified player just because they're a great person. I think on-field performance is our number one strategic imperative. We need players who help us win the most amount of matches, and so that's the priority.
And finally, it's quite a brutal dehumanising process, or can be. You know, I mentioned some of those players who've gone unsold, and, you know, you've got Jason Roy going for £200,000 and... I don't know whether he looks at some other opening batsman and thinks, are they really five times better than me? I mean, it can be make players feel a bit insecure.
Yeah, I think the positives of the auction are it creates a really competitive league. There's always going to be some players that benefit and some players that don't. Even within the same lot, if you come up first, it will impact versus coming out last, depending on how the franchises have gone. So I think players understand that broadly, and we communicate that to them. And generally they're supportive of the process and they're excited to play in the league. I think some players often put a base price too high in the IPL auction, which means they struggle to get that initial bid. Once you get the initial bid, You then got two franchises competing and it can escalate. So Liam Livingston, for example, put his base price at £1 crore, whereas we knew he was going to get some attention. But that, again, brought in multiple franchises into the thinking. Because there are 10 teams, because the supply was lower, any £2 crore players, it was actually more challenging to sort of fit them into your plans, especially if they're backups in the setup. And so I think there's a bit of control from the player side that they can help with the process. But overall, everyone's the same in our setup, whether you're earning 10 crores or 1 crore or 20 lakhs. And that's why I think players love coming back to us, because you know, everyone is equal. And that's why it's such a great environment.
So what are the aims for the Royals this year? Obviously, you're going to say yeah, we would like to win it. But I mean, you're going through a rebuilding phase in many ways. I guess everyone's rebuilt. But it has been a tough couple of years for the Royals, hasn't it?
Yeah, we've underperformed for the last 3 years. Yes, we had injury and availability challenges, but again, we had to learn from those. And if you look at who we've signed, again, we've got that strong Indian core, you know, are fully available. The overseas players we've signed are fully available. We want to be finishing in the top two of the league. Top two gives you a significantly higher percentage chance of making the final because you skip that qualifying round. And then you've got a good chance of winning it. So that's what we're aiming to do. We want to be at the top of the table come the end of the season. And hopefully we can achieve that.
Give us a snapshot of your job and how big the franchise is and you know, how many people are employed? Because we just get to see the tip of the iceberg, I'm guessing.
Yeah, I think the question's always asked. The season's only 2-3 months long. What's going on for the rest of it? And there is a huge amount. And I think different franchises have smaller teams. We've got 40 people working full-time just on the business side. Cricket side, there's another 40 people. So it's a big operation. We've launched an online education business. We've got an academies business. We've got our sponsor engagement year round, our digital engagement. We create content with the players. So there's a huge amount going on. We're looking at lots of different new ventures. We've got an amazing platform to engage fans and create commercial elements within the business. But also, always there's an element of giving back. So our online education business, we've got 10 different courses: digital marketing, sports management, team management. And what we do is for all IPL players, we offer the courses for free. So again, once they're towards the end of their career, they can invest in themselves and potentially shift into that space. Otherwise, obviously, it's a commercial entity. So there's a lot going on. It's an amazing job because, you know, we're leading the way in cricket around the world. And I'm trying to get us as a franchise to catch up with the teams in, you know, the Premier League teams and NFL teams and other teams around the world. So in the future, they're looking at us to say, wow, how did the Royals achieve this? What can we learn from them? So that's my aim for the franchise.
Aim big. Jake, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for your time. We wish you the very, very best for the season. Do you know where it's being played, by the way? Is it in India?
Yeah. We asked the question before the auction. They said it's definitely in India, but they're waiting to confirm if it's in one location or in multi-location. So they've told us, they'll tell us, I think, by the 22nd. So within the next week. So we're just waiting for that clarity.
Thank you once again, Jake. Good luck for the season. Cheers, thanks for your time.
Appreciate it.
That was Jake Lushmacrum, Rajasthan Royals chief executive. And it's time now for the Breaking the Boundaries feature with the Institute of Cricket.
Breaking Boundaries on TalkSport 2 with the Institute of Cricket. For the best chance of making it in professional cricket, you need to train with us. Find out more at instituteofcricket.com.
All right, delighted to say that we are now joined, a week late because he was busy last week, by the Managing Director of the Institute of Cricket. And I suspect, David Smith, you've been busy because it's February half term coming up, and that is a busy time, pre-season.
Yeah, absolutely. Obviously, everybody's very excited for the season kicking off, and you know, everyone's just trying to get their playing schedules and training schedules together for the, you know, the season kicking off. But yeah, we've been very busy. There's some of our venues have actually got half term at the moment, and some half terms take place next week. So a little bit of a split across the 2 weeks, but yeah, very busy.
David, I'm delighted to tell you, if you didn't know already, that the Cricket Collective is growing exponentially. We're getting thousands of new listeners each week. So how about a little recap for those who are listening who don't know about the Institute of Cricket?
Yeah, sure. So the Institute of Cricket is another part of a wider business called Complete Cricket. So the Institute of Cricket is very specialist in terms of the coaching that it offers. For players that are looking to go down the professional cricket coaching, cricket playing route, should I say. We offer camps during every holiday period. For elite players, we also offer specific coaching for players that are focusing on fast bowling, wicket keeping, spin bowling and batting, as well as offering high level masterclasses with lots of different players who have played international cricket. We recently held one with Dom Sibley a couple of weeks back. So that was really successful.
And that's interesting because we've had Jonathan Trott talking about Dom Sibley as a player who took 5 months off from international cricket to hopefully get himself back into form for international cricket. What sort of stuff was he talking to about the kids about? Because having an international opening batsman coming to talk to 14, 15, 16-year-olds must be special.
Yeah, I mean, it was really well attended. Dom's a lovely guy. He seemed really refreshed as well, having spoke to him for quite a period of time. He was, looking forward to the season starting. But the focus for the masterclass was Red Bull skills. And we'd actually set it up as Red Bull skills to coincide with the Ashes. But obviously, with everything that was in the news and the press about the techniques of the batsmen, it was timed really well. And that was, we were talking about, leaving the ball well, having a solid defence, being selective, and it was really well received actually by the players, and just reinforces how important that fundamental technique is.
And you talk about the half term, it's split over sort of 2 week period. Are you as busy for both weeks, and what specific skills are you looking to go on? From my example of being in Yorkshire, and I look at some of the fast bowlers, and they're ready to go. They've gone through the gears. They're ready to go, but unfortunately, there's another month or so before they can really get outside. Is it hard to rein kids in as well?
Absolutely. Yeah, no, I think as soon as you get into the lighter nights, it's the season is rapidly approaching. And it, like you say, you sort of feel that some of these players have been training pretty much since the season finished. So we've had quite a long winter period already. They're itching to go and itching to get out there on grass and start bowling, properly. So, it is tough, but, it's just trying to continue to enhance the areas of their game that they maybe struggle with a little bit more, and try and keep them fit and not doing, not overloading their bodies too much at the moment.
David, just finally, to those who say that the future of red ball cricket is bleak because kids just want to play T20 and they want to play white ball cricket, can you offer them any reassurance? I mean, do you see an appetite amongst teenagers who love the game to play orthodox red ball cricket?
Yeah, definitely. And I've said it before that the white ball batting skills are the skills that introduce players into the game. That's where you get players that want to come in and practice all the scoops and the hitting for, hitting the ball for six, and all the fancy skills are where you introduce the younger players into the game. But then you have to have a reset, and you have to make sure that they have the other skills fundamentally, because if they don't have the fundamental batting skills, they're not going to be able to do the fancier skills when it comes to facing better bowlers anyway. So I do see a massive appetite for players to want to come in and play, red ball cricket, and hopefully, go on and play all forms of cricket, not just be so dedicated to playing white ball, be able to, play three forms of cricket and be happy to do that. So yeah, that's very much our focus anyway.
David, on behalf of the Cricket Collective and of parents of cricket mad children throughout the country, I'd like to say a big thank you.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
That was the Breaking the Boundaries feature with the Institute of Cricket.
Breaking Boundaries on TalkSport 2 with the Institute of Cricket. For the best chance of making it in professional cricket, you need to train with us. Find out more at instituteofcricket.com.
Right, a couple of minutes left, Harmy, to wrap up other stories from around England or around the world that have caught your eye. Let me kick you off with one that has been right under your nose, because you're still coaching at Yorkshire, and they've had their international ban, I think, provisionally lifted, provided that they meet certain criteria. So that's got to be a massive sense of relief around the place, isn't it?
Yeah, I think that's good news for, obviously, Lord Patel, who's been pushing it along with, obviously, Darren Goff, the director of cricket. And I think it would be a huge blow on budgets and keeping players in employment if they lost the international cricket, at Headingley. It's a tough one, because I think you've got to look at the two incidents in individually. When Durham got punished, Durham got badly beaten up by the ECB over financial problems. This is different. I don't think anybody should lose. They should, neither of them should have lost their international status, because that's the financial reward they get to rebuild the country, to rebuild the county, and make sure that the county works in such a way where this trust comes back in. And that's what Yorkshire need at this minute in time. I do think they should be punished. I do think there should be sanctions on whether it's their 50 over, 20 over competitions, or even potentially losing the Northern Superchargers to Durham and have them play their home games there. But international cricket is needed at Headingley, because Yorkshire needs to rebuild the trust in the community, and the community needs funding. And I think that gets funded off the money that the international game brings to Headingley. So I think the right course, right action has done. Don't think it's over yet, but I think because international cricket will be played at Yorkshire next year, financially, you know, Yorkshire can rebuild the trust in the community, which is badly needed at this minute in time.
Talking of Northern Superchargers, James Foster has been appointed as head coach. He's a man who commands no shortage of respect, isn't he?
Brilliant. I'm over the moon for Fuzzy. He's a great guy. He's worked a lot in, you know, underneath the system in sort of England and stuff like that. The one thing that we've all, me and Darren Goff from TalkSport, have been shouting and very vocal and of our opinion on, when the 100 was announced, we had no English coaches. No English coaches. For me, that's a disgrace. There are some fine coaches in England. There's some great leaders. There's some good men who could lead these, you know, these franchises. And to have outside coaches coming in, I think is wrong. I don't mind the likes of Andy Flower, who have been in the system, who have coached England and been around a while, but coaches that just pop in for 6 weeks, 8 weeks a year, have no affiliation whatsoever with a game of cricket in England, I'm dead against that. But it's great to see one of your own get a job, and a top job in the 100, and that's what Fozzie's done at Northern Superchargers. And fingers crossed, you'll see, I know for a fact, you will surround yourself with good men. And with the likes of Ben Stokes there and one or two others, they'll have a good tournament in the 100 this year coming up.
We've only got 1 minute left and I've got two items, so I really need a short answer from this one. Amazingly, there's a two test series between South Africa and New Zealand about to start. New Zealand have won 4 out of 45 tests. South Africa's the only major nation they have never beaten in a test series. And it goes on and on. They've played 12 times since South Africa's readmission to international cricket in 92. They've lost 11 of them. It's the most astonishingly one-sided record, home and away. So who are you picking?
I'm going to pick South Africa. I think South Africa are turning a corner under Mark Boucher and Themba Bavuma. I just got a funny feeling that South Africa are going to do what South Africa do quite regularly, which is when they get into a point of strength and two steps forward, they tend to run three steps back. So hopefully that run continues. I think they're playing some good cricket under Bavuma as well as Mark Boucher. So I'm going to back South Africa in that one, even against the World Test Champions.
I'm picking New Zealand. Well, I'll put a pint on it.
I'll put a pint on it.
All right. And finally, did you see Mitchell Stark's delivery in the third T20 against Sri Lanka?
I did. It made mine look like a straight ball, didn't it?
Exactly. You now no longer own the widest ball in international cricket.
No, I don't, and it's great to see. It didn't happen very first ball of a competition, which has beamed millions of people around the world. So it'll get hidden and it'll get eased to one side. It'll not be the most embarrassing, not by any stretch of the imagination, but it does tell you that it happens to the best of us.
Okay, a reminder on the subject of T20s, you can hear the series between India and the West Indies live and exclusive here on TalkSport 2 starting on Wednesday. So thanks again, Harmy. You've been listening to the Cricket Collective here on TalkSport 2 with me, Neil Manthorpe, and former England fast bowler Steve Harmison. And if you've missed any of the show or you wish to catch up, you can download the podcast from the following on feed, now available, as always, via the free TalkSport app or wherever you get your podcasts. We'll be back at the same time next week for more of the biggest stories. This has been the Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.